How to work and play to defeat, maim, and win, the ethics of mangling your enemies. And I was going to expound upon that, hoping that someone might tune in on it who would like the theology of volleyball explained. But I will restrain myself, and you can read it on your own if you are interested in it, or you can tell that I have a theology of volleyball and maybe someone will dare ask someplace else. And so instead, I'd like to talk about the work-play ethic in American society. My beginning comes from Sebastian D. Grazi. Quote, "Perhaps you can judge the inner health of a land by the capacity of its people to do nothing. Because whoever can do nothing, letting his thoughts go where they may, must be at peace with himself. If he isn't disturbing thoughts cut in, he will run to escape into alcohol or the fury of activity called work." And this is his thought process on the problem with the work ethic. So as I see it, my first task is to define the two important terms I want to talk about. And in defining them, I'm really giving my lecture, practically. One is work ethic, and the other is the play ethic. But before embarking on the fundamental belief, which I think is significant, I see the general term work ethic to have two kind of foundations. One is in the Protestant work ethic, the Victorian, the Puritan thought process of man must not be idle. He must work in order to achieve his place among the elite in the kingdom. And that work is a demonstration of good works and a demonstration of his dedication and commitment to Christianity. And although this not be a good theological point, if it is true that we live by grace and that we are saved by faith and grace and not by good works, obviously the myth of the work ethic is not in keeping with our theological point of view. But whether it is or it isn't, the fact is it has affected us as Christians in the world, and so we need to look at the work ethic and to revamp it if it does not indeed follow or help us in our Christian communities or our Christian way of life. The second problem, as I see it, is the American work ethic different from the Christian work ethic. That perhaps what has happened and what historically happened, and we're finding this more and more to be true, is that they so intertwined with one another that we were unable to determine in our evaluations and our examination of history which was a work ethic from the Christian point of view and which was really a survival ethic, absolutely essential in order to survive in the frontier and in our way of life. And from there, I think it moved into a modern concept of the materialistic view of the necessity to work, so that as a result of the work, we have the ability to buy, to have value, to have personal worth through work, so that we expanded the work ethic and we became what I call work nuts. And that no matter what the price was, we were willing to pay it in order to have the prestige of that we are workers. And then we could continue to lay upon ourselves a lifestyle that was also Christian in nature if we worked, and if we would then perform those tasks that make for an organizational, traditional kind of pattern. And I see it as having inhibited, therefore, our freedom to play, our freedom for leisure, and that we therefore really need to carefully examine our thought processes. And of course, as a person interested in philosophy of play, I suppose I have an ought to, that we ought to play, which may put it into the work ethic just as bad as the one of working, which makes it kind of difficult for practical application. But as long as you know my biases in this direction, you can at least take some of the rationale and perhaps examine it. I think one of the major problems that we find is that we only have the two extremes that we either have the work ethic or the work culture and a counterculture. And the counterculture works not at all, and it would be entirely a play culture, and that the work culture tends to work only or as a reward for work to play. And that play then becomes some kind of reward, but not an end or a means in and of itself, that we have to put them on a continuum. And I think that this becomes difficult for us to handle and to treat. Now, in my definition of play, I'm using play because I am a movement person and physical activity and performance. My definition of play is any activity in which the joy of movement or performance is present. Now, I might have used leisure in a more a broader term and outside the domain of only the physical activity. And I think for most of you, you can substitute leisure at times for my concept of play. But I use play because I think everyone understands some part of play, and everybody has participated in play. And we can look at the children's world and see play. And so I prefer play, and I probably also prefer it because of an attachment back to the work ethic that maybe I'm getting fitness to as I'm playing. And so I never can escape my own self, in a sense. But anyway, as I look through it, I probably like to label some parts of play as pure play. And as I see pure play, that's the perfection or the goal that we're working for. It's the authenticity of a childlikeness, a freedom. A child does not have to work in order to play. And it's this kind of pure play that I see as a possibility for us, whether it's a fantasy, a make-believe, a mystical. I think our celebrations, our ritual, are really a part of our play culture, and gives us an excuse, in a sense, that we can celebrate in a play world.
Does this also include the ability to do nothing, this pure play?
Yeah, the pure play would be my daydreaming. Could be a form of pure play. My sitting on top of a mountain and merely seeing the beauty or the magnificentness of it would be a form of pure play. The leisure people would also put it as a nothingness of leisure. So I would put physical activity, but also a daydreaming kind. All the escapes, the natural escapes, and outside the boundaries of kind of real society, I think can be a form of play. And as we know, in the psychological sense, this can be detrimental, just as too much of any one thing can be detrimental. Play may become as detrimental as work for the counterculture.
Are you equating play always with fun?
No. for example, I think some sports are... have elements of play in them, but they may not always be fun, the ha-ha fun. I think inside my head, everything that I do that is play is also fun, but not in the word of fun versus sadness. I don't think I use them quite the same.
You said joy in your definition. That's a little different than fun, I think.
Yeah, why I prefer the joy of effort is that it is, you know, a slightly different than general society's thought of fun in the process of the play. Probably Homo Ludens, the book on a description of play, I also take my lead from. And in this, he talks about play as being a vital part of a culture. It serves an important function in life's pattern, although it does not necessarily have useful purposes in view of the society. But as I see it, because you play and you have peace of mind, it does in fact contribute to the society, and so it never is purely purposeless in its use. Or I wouldn't really even be talking about it if I saw it as having absolutely no use. but it may not have a utilitarian use as our society is used to thinking that it's got to have purpose. For example, if you examine carefully in a research sort of way child's play, it all has value. The animal plays, and it has value for making him fit for the society and the environment that he's going to live in. So I don't think it's we can ever really put it in a vacuum, but that we can look at it as outside of the work, the pure work kind of thought. I also see it as voluntary activity, and therefore that it is marked off from the natural order of the universe. And therefore we can do things in play that we don't do in life, and it still is a part of the total satisfaction that one gets. An example is the volleyball, that I can do something in volleyball because it is a separate culture almost that I can't do in society. And it's one of my safety valves of life. Even as I'm getting joy out of it, I'm getting something in addition to it, because I can make the rules, I can put the setting, I make the stage for what my game, my play is going to be. And for example, in the volleyball here, if 12 people have the same thought process as I do, then this makes it play. And it makes it outside the ordinary, and we have made the rules. Our rules are that we are there for a pursuit of excellence and for not necessarily winning or losing, but that all 12 of us have the same objective, which is to have a beautiful kind of movement, a strategy of the game, the reason for the game. And that as long as we are all together, we really have a cooperative group. And you might call it a clique, but it is only a clique in the sense that we have a common purpose. And our purpose really isn't winning or losing. For example, we in fact spend 5 minutes trying to even up the teams, so we definitely have a doubt as to the outcome. And we're not having a win syndrome, but a spike with a block is probably the most exciting thing in the world for those of us who have the same common goal of volleyball. But it's not a win-loss. And when I move to UCLA and start coaching it for the women, then I am in a different world, and it's no longer play, it's then my work. And so the same game can have different purposes for me, it can have different boundaries. And that's what's the neat thing about play, as I see it, and the freeing thing. Another 12 people really love to play. They love to have fun. They love to socialize with one another. And the media happens to be those boundaries in that court. And however it can get over the net and back, and we cooperate with each other, that's fun. But when you mingle the two, then you don't always have fun. Then you have tension, because we're not on the same wavelength. We're not on the same objectives. And that's where play gets really mixed up when it moves to sport and when it moves to athletics. As soon as it moves to athletics, my definition of athletics is that there are spectators. So it's entertainment for somebody as it's something else for the people playing. And then money is in it, and then it completely separates itself to work, as far as I'm concerned.
You wouldn't also have that separateness feeling of being outside of a culture anymore, would you?
No, then you are,
and you are
in what, yeah, you become a part of that, which is the freeing. Because then work on, for example, the work on the volleyball court, my other work is irrelevant to what's happening there. For the people that are having fun, often fun times, they don't look at a clock, which to me is an example of a state of pure fun, perhaps, is where you really didn't know. There's the bell. How could it be the bell? We just started. And so it's a separate world. And that kind of play is a voluntary kind. It's distinct from ordinary life. And where the problems come, and the problems come in Little League, where the kids have been playing sandlot. They have their own time. You see kids in sandlot baseball, they even up the teams. And they don't need an umpire. They take care of everything within themselves, and they want even teams. They really don't want lopsided. So they don't have a win-loss syndrome in their play. We give it to them because we mix up what is the purpose of play. If it becomes, the purpose is to teach cooperation, or it's to teach character, or it's to make you fit, or it's to get rid of your aggressions, it becomes a meaningful thing, different from what the kids are doing it for. And so we kind of structure them. And so I have difficulty sometimes with how we structure play. And our society kind of moves in on the whole process, and we end up in some troubles. Play also creates its own order and its own rules. So in New Jersey, you may be playing kickball one way, and in California, you play kickball another way, and everybody's playing kickball and loving it. I might surf what I call surfing one way. Jim surfs another way, and it still is pure play. We still are getting the same kind of kicks, perhaps, which I see as one of the values of play, is really an excitement, a risk. And that people that mountain climb, people that surf, people that drive cars in sports racing, that they merely have selected a form of play that is risky. And as I see it, they have a perfect right to do that. That it's a form of ultimate athlete for them, a form of ultimate play for them. And that they have as much right to do that as does the skydiver for money, or as does the jet pilot or the experimental pilots who may well die in their attempts. To me, it's no different if I select that risk here or I select it here, that I have an equal right in play or work to select my risks.
Yeah, you said now that play creates its own order, and that it is and that the player has control over one's own self. You know, it's the one time when you're separate from the rest and you can do it yourself. Kind of. That sounds, you know, to me like a lot like the work ethic coming back again. You know, creating, being able to create your own order, being able to do it yourself.
But it's an order that you have selected, which is not a work order. It is a play order. While the work order, maybe you select your work order that way, and then really you love your work. And it's not really work. Yeah, there's no superimposed. What is superimposed is if I walk into the fun game and try to make it a different kind of game, then I've superimposed something that takes away from their kind of world, just as someone walks into a very structured, cooperative, highly competitive kind of game, and they want to make it a fun game. Then they have superimposed a value on a whole group that likes the value. And in society, this may also happen, but for different reasons. And it may be necessary for the world order of the work. And then what happens, Barb, is if I find that the structure that's been superimposed on me takes it away from being play, then I leave it, and it's not play anymore. I might be doing it for another reason. You know, I might be doing it for prestige. I might be doing it to get another job. I might be doing it, like I might play golf to sell something. Then I don't see that as a part of the pure play freedom. I see that as part of my work, that I use play as a means towards my work. And then it takes it, you know, it takes it away from it.
Does any of the play have any presuppositions, or does it really grow out of kind of a vacuum, you know, a need for freedom? Or are you going into some, do you ever go into play with any kind of a definite order in your own mind, except that it comes out of the play itself? The order comes out of the play itself.
Oh, I think you do play both ways, and depends on what kind of being you are. I think there's a social group or order within play. There's also a secrecy in play. If you watch kids, they know who's going to play house with them. In some way, they have a secrecy about them, which makes it more play. And I think in volleyball here, we have a secrecy about it in some of its ways. And where the sin comes, if there is in the ethics of it, is that you permitted someone to come into it without explaining what it was. And that's the sinful kind of part. And then expect perfection out of it, Or I walk into a fun game and I don't know that it, look, we're here for the sheer joy of the movement, not for perfection of the movement, because some want perfection of the movement and some don't. And that's the freedom of it all. Even in fishing, you'll have two fishermen who are there almost for different purposes. One is there having peace of mind, and if he happens to catch fish, great. The other fisherman is there for the competitive sport of catching the largest fish. And both of them are legitimate, as far as I can, in my philosophical position. They both have their place, and I have no right to criticize his competitive fishing, nor he my competitive fishing, when it's outside of the real life. Now, if I have to catch him to support my family, and they're home waiting for my fish, then I've moved into work, and then I think I might have to structure how I go about that fishing. I can't dream while 16 bites go by. And so that in some ways you have to separate work and play. You know, I would really like to theoretically have it all wrapped up in one nice kind of world, but it really isn't. Some of the time I definitely know I'm working, and sometimes I definitely am at play. And both fortunately and unfortunately for me personally, my work is my play. And so sometimes my play becomes drudgery if it is a result of work. For example, I never teach tennis to anyone except my job of having the tennis team. And this is because my play life of tennis, I want to be as pure as it can. And if I'm thinking about how you're hitting the ball when I'm playing you, or I'm trying to teach you something, then that time has really become work. And I'm not doing it for my leisure. I'm doing it for maybe to pay back somebody, maybe for some other reason. But I just have made it a policy of not teaching tennis. I also have a policy, because my eye vision is limited in the amount of time I can play, not to play with beginning tennis players, no matter how much I like them, because it takes me out of the play element and I only have so much time. Now, I should be freer. I should have more time, but I'm restricted in a health sense to how much time I can devote to that. And so I have moved. And it's very difficult for some of my friends to comprehend that it isn't play for me. It isn't sport if I'm playing with them. That what my objectives, it doesn't satisfy me, it doesn't fulfill, it doesn't give me joy. And so my joys are quite different. And as I see it, I have sort of a right to those kinds of joys. I also see then, in terms of play, that play then has a beauty, an enchantment, and a captivation all of its own in play. Now, all of us aren't going to have all of these things as we play, but that within that, some of these things happen, and that's what my definition of play is. Now, a subset of play for me is games, or can be. Sport can be. It has elements of it. Athletics can, but you're really pushing it because you've brought in personal egos and you've brought in spectators in a highly competitive setting. And it may not be, but that it can be. Exercise or a pursuit of fitness can be fun and play for some. Jogging can be play. But if its real purpose is for fitness, I approve of it for the fitness objective, but it's not a form of pure kind of play. I think the neat thing about play and sport and game and leisure is that you really do get more than your money's worth, in that you are getting fitness. Even though it's not your primary purpose, you're getting it. You may be getting togetherness, even though it wasn't your primary purpose. So I see it as just having all kinds of neat possibilities, because it has more than one purpose. And that everybody has a right to use fitness for its purpose, fitness. And that I do it for that sake, and I do it so that my work is better, that my life at home is better, and that that's a legitimate goal. But that it fits on a different continuum in the whole level. So with these two things defined, why I think that we need to look at work and play is because of how our society is in reality. One, we are in the technological age, and this has to affect our lifestyle and our value systems. Because the fact is, work in many ways has become non-essential. that work is not a priority. It is not a way that we can have self-identity. That, in fact, unemployment, scientific advances, and the non-essential portions of work has put us in a crisis that we really aren't facing. That we really still look at Jim and we say, what do you do for a living? Barbara, what do you do for a living? And if Barbara says, I am a student, well, fine. That's a category and it's all right. If she's a wife, that's fine. Jim says, I don't do anything. I am unemployed. I'm working or on welfare or I'm doing this or that. We immediately put Jim in a box of, and now what is Jim's work? But Jim thinks that maybe he will be a carpenter next week. And then we all sigh, and life now can go on because we have found a life work. But I was reading just recently that there are going to be 4 billion people by the 21st century, and that this will make work almost non-essential for over half of those people, and particularly in jeopardy are the countries such as America who have advanced in our technological age so that we need few laborers in the marketplace. We need push-buttoners and not laborers. And that this may well be the crisis if we don't find some way of having identity, of having a way of life, a lifestyle, where there is a place in the sun regardless of the work kind of concept, that we aren't going to be needed in any sort of way. It's not like the wonderful life on the farm where everybody was in fact needed. And a lot of our self-identity, according to some of the psychologists, is because the children, as they grow, we don't really have a need for them to do the dishes. I mean, after all they have to do is put them in the machine. Now, there is a problem of who puts them in the machine, but that doesn't take over the whole work. And the garbage, you don't even have to walk from the back door to take it out to the garbage can, which was my brother's only task, but now you stick it right down the drain. And so he has no task that's really essential. And when you look at children, there are a lot of tasks that they no longer really have to do. And so we find all kinds of crises, and I think that we have to face it. We're having more leisure time. Fading into history really is a need for the fundamental need to work long hours. In concept of leisure, I was just reading of the 4-day week and the importance of it if we all are going to have anything to do in our society. So that in our contemporary Christian society, we need to face this vital issue that although we have energy problems, food problems, pollution, that the freedom of time is either going to be a chain or it is going to be freedom. And that we need to examine how are we going to attack it? How are we going to face it? We don't need the wage earner. His work becomes routine and he's losing and having difficulty with the whole pattern. And so that we really have to face our leisure time. That we have been given a heritage that I'm not sure we really want. That the luxury of leisure is a legacy without any merit or worthiness in us. And we really like to have a little worthiness ourselves, just left from our whole Christian kind of ethic. But it's already a gift. It's a gift of our American heritage. And that we need to begin to either use it in a meaningful way or that we are going to find ourselves in therapy because we don't use it in a very constructive way. So that time hangs heavy rather than freeing upon us. And that one of the problems is that we find it as taking away from our identity. And that we really, in fact, have achieved everything we want. We have achieved in the American dream affluency. We really have it. We've achieved leisure time. And we have achieved purchasing power. And all of them are at its height. And so that we are really in a crisis in our lives, and that we can select to use this leisure as the Romans did. They had leisure and plenty of leisure to burn. And one of the scary things is to look at the Roman way of culture, the Epicureanism way of wine, women, and song, the gladiator fights, the circus fights, the chariot races, and bloodier kinds of activities for the spectator, so that they began to be dedicated to the blood and guts, as I call the Roman era of play. And that if we start examining our own society, it gets a little scary. What do we like best in ice hockey? What's some of the things we really like?
Oh, when they cut their face.
Cut their face and they get put in that little box. And then just for added attraction, a lot of our blue-collar workers are busy going to the roller derbies, where now they're really getting blood and guts. And then it's nice in a football game if we just can have a few pushing of heads together and a nice boxing match where we get to look right head on with the puffy eyes. And so we're really not looking in some ways much different. And I see television as one of the great handicaps of the play work. On the other hand, we could look at the Greek way of life in its ideal form, in which the movement, the pursuit of excellence, was for its own purpose. On the other hand, we could look at the Greek way of life in its ideal form, in which the movement, the pursuit of excellence, was for its own purpose, and that the leisure was for a total being. Drama, art, music, all became a part of the ideal time in the Greek way of life. And as I see this, this would be everybody participating more than watching. And so that the spectator idea, J.B. Nash, one of our leaders in leisure, talks about spectatoritis of our society. And that maybe what we really need is to be born with two big eyes and a big seat. And that's really all we need in our society. And so with our leisure time, I think we have to start rejecting some of, or at least evaluating some of our play lives. And we might look more to the creative movement of the children's way of inventing things. If you look around here, we've got children that are here at least a month, from say 7, all the way from 4 to 12. And you don't see them very much in organized play, but you see them creating all kinds of games of their own, all kinds of ways of life. People that are left to their own activities here find places to hike, things to look at, things to do if we just leave them alone. And I think it's an example of the kinds of creative things we can do. Or let them sit on a rock. It really is not sinful to sit on a rock for hours at a time, which is a state of nothingness, which I call a form of a play, or at least leisure, because you have selected to do this. And that in some cases, we shouldn't be bugging children to do some of the kinds of play we want them to do. Now, we can bug them if we want to do it for fitness, but don't call it for the sheer fun. We want you to do it for fun. If you want them to do it for fitness, then make it a discipline and do it for fitness. Make organized play so they learn cooperation, but don't call it fun, because then it's taking away from, I think, our concept. So I think what we have to do is to reject the position that every investment of human energy must be a productive and a useful result. I think we need to reject that the source of value only comes in money, materialistic or work kinds of values, or concrete kinds of things. That self-expression, self-satisfaction of achievement is a perfect kind of goal. That play can be an acceptable model which leads to individualism, psychic fulfillment, and that it still can be the community sharing. And that the glorification of work that's produced this residual feeling of guilt, when in the midst of it, has to die. And that we have to be able to bridge the gap between the work and the opposite extremes of the counterculture. That we need to look at the alternatives and the spirit of play, an attitude of play, even if it is not a physical doing of the play. And that our temptation is to use the materialistic wealth and consumption of goods as the status symbol to replace the prestige, maybe of the non-work. And that those of us who have to find a second job so that we can buy better toys and travel more, that maybe we're really a materialistic kind of play society and not in the whole pure play. And that the frontier of it, as I see it, needs to be a fundamental component. And that within our churches, it can well be a fundamental component part of the total and the totality of life, as opposed to play as a reward for work. That it needs to be a model that brings about the freedom to play. That it's not glorification of the soul through asceticism of the body. That's probably the first thing that needs to go in our concept. That the games that we play are a phony, that some of the life games. In fact, the other day I was reading about that there are 35 different books called games in some way. Gamesmanship, gods in games, people in games. So we are leisure conscious when we use that word game, and we all think we know what it means. But that we're often setting up a false kind of game that needs to have itself evaluated. And finally then, I see that we need man, the player in each of us, and that each of us can be a model for children. We can be a model for the adult world. We can be a model in our church by being a player. That playing and the change in the culture begins with the individual. And that if the woman, for example, will play, then her girl child will see a concept of play. And that the way, for example, we're going to get rid of discriminatory kinds of thoughts that women don't have to be fit, they just have to be in the kitchen, and they don't need to play. Man needs time off for golf, but women need to have coffee hours, at most, for their play. That this is superimposed on the children. And that we need to have family play and a real fun kind of whatever the play is, so that the models are set. I see myself as a player more than as a worker. And maybe it's my rationalization that has permitted me to develop this thought process that I'm a do-gooder if I play and I get others interested in the adventure of play. Like, I like to have everybody about me interested in playing something and in their own sort of way. I like to talk other people into hiking. I think it's an exciting beginning in a very easy way. I used to like to teach tennis to women, to begin the process of playing tennis. I like to teach badminton to kids, because all kids can learn it. I like to do it myself with them. And I see that as one of our responsibilities if we believe in play, that you cannot believe in it without participating in some way. If I am very, very handicapped, the play becomes a leisure kind of reading. Storytelling, escaping in minute vacations of some kind, but that there has to be a dedication by us and a freeing spirit. And I think the church is one of the ways that we can do it, because the church is one of the groups that have caused the most problems and given us the biggest guilt complexes, so that we might have an even added responsibility. I think my presence in a place like this illustrates my real fundamental belief in a combination of work, study, play, and that one can do it all together. I think my practical application ends up in more play than work here, but that the concept of it is significant, and if anybody asks me, I'm glad to share what I see as essential. I'm also interested in the fitness part of play, but that's kind of a separate issue, but I think it's essential for totality of living. And that maybe when you have to make some choices, some days you choose fitness, some days work. And I don't see work as being shut off from our society, that we don't combine the two. But one of the big things that I think we have done wrong in our society is to the senior citizen, in which we have not taught him the value, or her, the value of who they are when they have retired. And if there's any illustration of our failures as players, it's in looking at an awful lot of the senior citizen self-concepts. We have told them for years, work, 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 and suddenly we now say, play, play, play. And it's a concept that's just incredibly difficult to pursue unless we really start at it and work at it and we accept the responsibility for it. And so before the questions, my final thought is a need for an attitude of play. An attitude in which you play for the sheer joy of the movement, even if no other purpose is found in it. Even if it doesn't keep you from having heart attacks, too much tension, drinking yourself to death, or any of these other things. that it's a balance of the work and play, which I see as conducive to totality and wholeness of living, and really essential in our Christian kind of environment. And so I'd like now for you to sort of talk with each other or ask questions in any concepts or anything that may not have been clear or you think as not good for the good or the ethical.
I wouldn't
group.
Make fitness just work. I mean, just sort of something you have to do. You have to invent myths about it. I mean, when I try to do things, and that's the only way I can do it, is to pretend, even if it might not be play, that it's somehow better than just sitting there.
Yeah, and I'm not a bit offended by 8 women have to get together in a class and pay $50. I'm offended by the $50, but I'm not offended about the idea and the socialization. As a matter of fact, if I believed only in fitness, I would say build no more gymnasiums, no more play fields, nothing. Because the quickest way to fitness is jogging and swimming, and maybe you can put a little weightlifting on it, and that'll give you cardiovascularly, endurance, flexibility, it's all right there. But that our society's not that way. We don't quit smoking just because you ought to quit smoking. And so I see, for me, I don't do any of these. I do no exercises except when I'm going to come to climb mountains in preparation for a play life or for fitness. I do the activity itself. But I think the beginning level, if you decide at 45 you're going to become a player, then I think you have to pay the price of the discipline of it. No, in fact, I try to hide as much as I can from that. The reason you ought to do this is for fitness.
Yeah.
But I think the adult, the intellectual guys, the only way you can attack them is you're going to die, buddy. And you're going to, and not only are you going to die, but maybe you won't write your book as well.
Yeah.
And in my society, and then you get back to the work. What I'm really doing is pushing on his work that I'm against. In it. Yeah.
It's also a lot more work when you're out of shape, though. I mean, certainly you have to have that sort of thing to make yourself.
Yeah, there's. If you could just keep a minimum.
But I read in U.S. News or something that, boy, if you put in an hour of work or exercise a day, you'll be able to work 2 hours more a day if you want your job. You wouldn't buy that.
No, because I buy that you can exercise, actually, in terms of physiological well-being, 3 times a week with, say, that hour, and it depends on how much you do that hour with. And then, of course, one of the things that it does is the whole obesity area.
Yeah.
That
you
know, well, and that's a legitimate reason for exercising, as far as I can see. So I can eat more. I'm willing to exercise sometimes. You know, I think we have all kinds of legitimate reasons. Barb?
The minute you say though that you need to have play, or that you need to do this, or that you have to do this in order to prepare for the free time, the leisure time that we've all of a sudden have, or that we're going to become old. As soon as you say that, then you're really substituting the leisure or play for work, and you've got the same functions of work, only they're just applied back to play now. And so what have you gained?
Nothing if it's a pressure as opposed to an inner desire. But it's still a propaganda routine for having a balance in your life. Now, if you select not to have that balance, but if you know about the balance and the joy that might come from it, but if it's a compulsion, and this is what we have in some of the fitness, is a compulsion to do it, or a family decides, well, we have to play this weekend, and really, Dad had a terribly hard week, and what he really ought to do is sleep his life away.
But there's really a lot of work that's not compulsion. Most of us, you know, do half of our work as a result of we don't have to do it, but we, you know, we sort of feel like we will.
But see, that may be really leisure, as I perceive leisure. For example, if I mow the lawn for my dad because I want exercise, I consider that I have now participated in a leisure. That it happened to have useful purpose isn't significant. But when my dad used to say, cut the lawn, that same job was work. So I think that a lot of my work is play. I love to sit and watch the results of my tennis coaching in doubles. There is no way that is work. Even when they don't quite execute it, but you can just see them enjoying switching positions. You see them moving up and back.
That's leisure or play for you?
That is a form of leisure and play in spite of being paid for it. Not play,
no,
in leisure.
There's no movement in that, though, either.
For me. But that is in my observation of it, and that's why I would put it leisure more than play. Actually, I have a lot of movement in it.
Yeah, within your yeah. play, I see about three different areas. You know?
Yeah, that's right, because I just use the word play because it's a funner word for me.
And you aren't saying either.
Yeah. If you're going to make first lunch, by the way, or pick up your children, you may have to be moving. I'll be here a few more minutes.